This is the Tanakh study on 21 September 2019, and we are introing to the work of the Spirit, which will be in session two. This is session one. All right, so we're going to start with a Torah passage, which all of you are very familiar with, and it happens to be Exodus chapter 31, which you can see on the big board to some degree. Devin, can you read that?
No.
Good. All right, so let's walk through this. We'll talk about it. Starting at 31, I'm using the KJV, as I always do. You all feel free to use whatever you want, but I'm staying with the KJV. All right. And here it says, this is speaking to Moses, I have called by name Bezaleel, possibly, the son of Uri, the son of Hur of the tribe of Judah. So we have an individual specifically called. That's what we're starting with. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God. That's an important statement. In wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and in manner of workmanship. Now we're going to be discussing the subject about infilling. So it is very important that we see what this passage is saying here. And we'll talk about how we understand this. In verse 4, which I'll roll up a little bit, to devise cunning works, to work in gold and silver and brass. 5, cutting of stones, to set them, carving of wood, to work in all manner of workmanship. And I'll do 6 since we're here. And behold, I have given with him another gentleman from a different tribe. The first tribe is Judah. This gentleman is from the tribe of Dan. So we have 2 folk. And in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted. So now we have 1 specific, 2 specific, and then a group of non-specific people who are wise-hearted. I have put wisdom that they may make all that I command. All right, so let's talk about this from a position of on its face. The time has come. We are out of Egypt. Some events have taken place. It is time to build the furniture that is going to be involved with the tabernacle, which is going to be part of the worship system. It's also going to be involved with sacrifices and things of that nature. And we need to have a traveling house. So we're going to build a house. The way that I'm understanding this is that at that time, it would appear to me that the people did not have the skill to do all the things that God wanted done. So he decided to select some people based on, what did it say? In the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, that's verse 6, I have put wisdom. He has decided to ask of certain individuals and has filled them with his Spirit to accomplish these specific things. That's what I'm taking away. Anybody have a different takeaway? Greg?
It seems like they already have some ability to begin.
Possibly. That would probably be handy. Would it be fair to say that if they did have a level of ability, then this was to enhance that ability?
Yeah, because like, well, I can do a little carpentry, and you can do a little bit more, but as you learn, and you learn from other people, you make it better.
Right, okay.
Things you may have not have thought about, like I was watching something on YouTube on how to get the perfect dimension on a notch.
Really?
They use duct tape.
They use what?
Duct tape.
I love duct tape.
Yeah, well, just take regular tape, you put it on the arch, cut it, and pull it off very closely, and then you got the complete length of the arch.
Wow. That is so cool. You know, that and Velcro, the aliens left for us, I love it. Okay. All right, anybody else have any other thoughts about this passage? On its face, I got some people with, without talents, but we'll go with talents. I'm going to enhance them so that they will be able to accomplish what I would like to have in furniture design, development, building. We're good? Now, the text in 3 is the verse of note. I would think that would be reasonable to say. I have filled them with the Spirit of God in wisdom, understanding, knowledge, manner of working, to be able to work. Now, I find it interesting that for whatever amount of time it took to build this, and I'm assuming it took more than a day, took some period of time, they built this, they had all of these things working in their lives as it relates to the furniture, for whatever that time period is. I'm not going to read into the text, but I think it's reasonable to think that once the furniture was built, that they didn't need to have this level of ability anymore. Is that important? Does anybody care? Nobody cares. Okay. So, we can even go beyond that and say maybe they did keep it. But here's the thing that concerns me. These people, and we only know two of them by name, the rest of them is just a group. Is that group a dozen? Is it 25? We don't know. The text doesn't say. We just know that it was some people that were equipped by being indwelt by the Spirit for a period of time to accomplish a purpose, and all of them died because they didn't have faith in God and they didn't make it in to gain their inheritance. So the fact that they had the Spirit fill them for this calling, which was a great thing. This was a great thing. I mean, what kind of honor level is that? Okay, everybody's gathered at the tent. Okay? Everybody's gathered at the tent. We got this big meeting. Got 6 million people there. Okay? This is a big meeting. And so, out of the heavens, there's this voice that says, I'm choosing Lee Miller, son of Lee Miller. And I am going to fill him with the Spirit, and he is going to be filled with wisdom and blah, 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 and he's going to do this. I think I feel pretty good about myself. I'm being called to do something pretty cool. And yet, guess what? It had no value when it came time to trust God and be able to gain their inheritance. Speak. Yes, ma'am.
How do you know Bezalel was not under the age of 20? We know her was there holding up Abraham's hands at a later time. And this was Moses. And this was his grandson.
That is a good point. That is a good point.
And his name means in the shadow of hell, and the other one means in the tabernacle of his father. So
yes.
They were born with these names, and
so that is really a possibility, right? They could have been underage at that time.
Underage? Under the age of cutting off.
The age of the cutoff.
Not in the army, not in the military.
Well, the father of her is Caleb. And according to some Bibles, not the King James, Hezron was one of the 70 that went to Egypt.
Really?
And Hezron's son, one of his three sons, that it names it first. In the first place, it says Kalubai, and then down about 4 or 5 verses later, it says Caleb, the son of Hezron. So Kalubai and Caleb. And Caleb is the same. Person, so.
Where the going down, was that in Exodus or the end of Genesis?
Yeah, it's Chronicles.
First Chronicles, okay.
Chapter 2.
Carol, thank you for that. I'm going to look this up, see what I can find out.
So how many years do you think that they were in in Egypt?
A few.
Yeah. Probably not 430.
But it could be over 30.
It could be over 200.
It could be over 200, right. Okay. Nice point, Carol. You good? Okay, we'll move on. All right, so from here, we are going to go to Judges. At least I'm going to try to go to Judges here. We're going to 6. All right, so in this particular section here, and let me give you a background of Judges. We'll discuss this more in November when we actually get to Judges and we deal with the book, but I just want to give you enough overview for you to understand. And Jackie and I were talking about this earlier in the week, that in a manner of speaking, Judges is equal to the eighth day. It's really cool how it fits. We're not saying it's accurate. We're just saying it fits the facts, and I'll give you that, what we understand. In Judges, and I'm going to cover it. Should I go over this? Because I'm covering it later. Well, let me just give it to you briefly. There's a section, both at the end of Joshua and in the beginning of Judges, where it repeats itself, and in essence it's saying that after Joshua died, the elders and those people who were alive at the time that Joshua was operating continued to walk in the way that they were to walk, but then eventually they died as well, and then the people fell away into idol worship. It says that in those two sections, where Joshua ends and where Judges begins. And it mentions that. I think all of that is covered by the time you get to the end of chapter 1. So it didn't take too long, and we were reading it up in the Shema. Two things, but the second thing was about teaching your children. You remember one time I played the song, Teach Your Children. We played it in the assembly, because that is true. The instructions on how to get this thing to work have been stated. We say them in the Shema at every meeting, that giving the opportunities that we can teach our children how to walk these things out. They're more than just data points on a graph. So I'm thinking to myself, when I'm reading this, as I'm studying to prepare for today, I'm going, what do you mean everybody just immediately fell away? What is that? How is that even possible? It says teach your children and your children's children. What, were they not doing it? That concerns me. So I'll be looking into that when I get to the Judges part. But when we start chapter 6 here, you're going to see how it works. It's like a yo-yo. It is, they're serving him. Then somebody dies, and then they all crash and burn, worshiping idols. God gets upset, gets angry. What does he do? He puts them in bondage. And they hang out in bondage. They're oppressed. They're squashed like bugs. Finally, somebody calls out. God sends a deliverer. They're back up here. And they're hanging out for a while. That guy dies. The entire Israel crashes and burns again. Same thing. And it's over and over and over and over. That's what the book of Judges is about. And since I happen to be a fan of the prodigal son theory as it relates to the eighth day, I'm seeing it played out in Judges. Because when the people get pressed to the max, they eventually get tired of it and they say, you know, why don't we just call out on God and repent? And then they do, and then God responds. So I'm looking at what happened to the prodigal son. He said, you know, my dad's servants are doing better than I'm currently doing. I think I'll go back. I hope I have a home left. So I'm a fan of that theory. I like it. I feel good about it. So I'm seeing in the book of Judges, that is exactly what happened. Oppress them to death. They eventually call out. Give them some space. As soon as that person's dead, crash and burn. Crush them again. Now here's the problem. While I would like to think that that was going to be successful, in the end it wasn't successful. What happens in the end? We need a king. Everybody was upset about that. So, and we'll get there. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But I just want you to understand, we're jumping into 6. Some stuff has already happened, but it's basically that is the pattern. All right, so here we go. 6 and verse 1. It says, chosen evil did evil in sight. They were delivered to the hand of Midian for 7 years. And Midian prevailed. And blah, blah, blah. Israel, let's see, 6, greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. And they cried out. And it came to pass when they cried out that he sent a prophet. So here we go. All right. Delivered it out of the hands. and blah, blah, blah. And it goes through there, and here we got some. Came the angel of Yahweh, sat on an oak, and talked to a gentleman named Gideon. How many people have heard of Gideon? Heard a few stories, okay. So, 12, the angel appears to him. Yahweh's with you, mighty man of valor. That sounds pretty cool. That sounds like some uplifting type thing. 13, Gideon. Here's my question. If Yahweh is with us, then why is all this fallen upon us? That must be a young person. Young person who hasn't experienced all of this. He knows that it was bad. And now he's hearing that I am with you. So he says, why has this fallen? Well, the answer is because you keep crashing and burning with worship of idols. That's why. Of course, he doesn't answer that here, but that we know that's the answer. So let's keep going. He talks a little history there in 13. 14. Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Okay, so there is the call. And then he's like, my family's poor, and I'm the smallest in my dad's house. So we're talking probably, it could be at least the youngest, could be pretty young. I haven't looked up the dates of this because that's outside the scope of today. How can one person do this? Okay, so yeah, there's doubts. Sometimes we have doubts. So sometimes it's nice to have a sign. So he asked for a sign. Where's the sign? Show me a sign in 17. Here's the sign. Let me go make you dinner. That's the sign. Don't leave while I'm making dinner. Okay? What can I say? It's a food issue. So, 19, Gideon goes and chefs it up. Okay, and then take the flesh, unleavened cakes, put them on the rock, pour the broth on. Then puts forth the end of the staff. It's 21, touch the flesh. Fire rose out of the rock, consumed everything. And then Gideon's left alone to evaluate what just happened here. All right, that's kind of exciting, kind of nervous, but kind of exciting. All right, 22, all right. 23, peace be unto you, thou shalt not die. So he built an altar. 25, it came to pass the same night, cut down the altar of Baal. Yeah, right, okay. Build another altar, 26. Then 7 takes 10 servants, and he's obedient. And then in 28, and the men of the city arose early in the morning. Behold, the altar of Baal's cast down, and the grove was cut, and the second bull was offered upon the altar. And they said to one another, who has done this? And so eventually they work it out that this is Gideon. Oh, great. All right, so they bring him out that he may die because he's cast down the altar of Baal. So they're in the middle of pagan idol worship. So then Joash stood against everybody and says, you're going to plead for Baal? If he's a god, let him plead for himself. Okay, and so then they said, oh, okay, that's fine. And everybody leaves. Everybody's happy. Okay, so then it goes on. Now look at 34. The Spirit of Yahweh came upon Gideon. So, we got something happening. This is not the same as the other gentleman, where he is filled with the spirit of wisdom to accomplish a task. This is the Spirit of Yahweh comes upon Gideon. Now, I want to jump to Hebrews because you're familiar with the passage in the chapter of faith. I'm sorry that we have to use this type of system here, but my Bible is kind of small for looking at passages on a minute. I think my computer screen is larger than that TV. Okay, so this is the chapter of different people and the work that they did. So I need you to see this. We're going to run down to 32. This is 11. So in 32, after he's already talked about some folk, he says, and what more can I say? The time would fail me to talk about Gideon. All right, so And then when he talks about what he says in 33, what he's talking about in 32. So you got the person. So what is Gideon? Through faith subdued kingdoms. Gideon had the faith to subdue the Midianites, who had been assigned to crush Israel for disobedience. And he subdued that kingdom. And the text says he did. So here it's talking about Gideon, through faith, subdued kingdoms. And it talks about Barak and Samson and another guy here, and David and Samuel. And you can see some of the things like stop the mouth of lions. How many people know who that was? That was David. Okay? So he... Huh?
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel too.
But David might have done it too.
Didn't he beat up on lions somewhere? What?
Yeah, David killed animals.
Okay, so that's stopping the mouth in a manner of speaking. All right, so here in the Hall of Fame, Gideon is mentioned. This is the Hall of Fame and Gideon's mentioned. So that's, I think that's pretty good.
So what do you think that means, that he's mentioned here? Do you think that means he's going to be the first resurrection?
Well, that is exactly the question that we need to answer.
Yeah.
Is it not? All right, because we know that the Spirit came upon him. And we know that he shows up in the chapter of faith leaders. And we have the record of the text, which says that he subdued that nation. Remember, he had the army that was too big? So he had to cut it down. So he cut it down some. God said it's not enough. So then he had to cut it down some more. Got down to this little teeny group. Because God wanted to make sure he got the glory. And it wasn't, you know, so that the guys couldn't say, you know, we pulled this off ourselves. Right? That's a problem. So I just want you to see that the Spirit comes upon Gideon, and here he is because of what he did at that time. You see that? All right. Let's move on. No. We're back to Judges, though. All right, so in 7 here, we're going to work through some of the things that take place. I want to see if there's anything here that I want to talk about that pertains to what we're doing. A lot of this is very positive for him, as he's, in this case here, you can see in 6, he's working up a plan to be able to reduce the size of the army to a really small number. And in 6, it talks about how that worked out and the number that he ended up with. And so then he's taking those people and he's going through, in this chapter, he's going through the things that are going to happen. And then he gets the vision in 13, has the dream, and he goes through that. And then he says, okay, well, this is good. That means that God is with me, so I'm going to go ahead and do this. And he delivers them from the Midianites. So this chapter is kind of history. And I wanted to show it to you because we're going to be talking about what happens to Gideon. Because the Spirit came on him, and then we have to look at that. So that's going to be in the next section. We have to separate these things out. All right. I'm going to go ahead over to chapter 8 so that we can take... there's one more thing I do want to show you. We're going to drop down. He's been pretty successful at this point now. So he's starting to interact with some of the other people, and things are not going well, and he gets upset with them. Let me get down to where we're close here. So he tears down a tower, slews the men in the city, 18, and he's got these two guys here, and then eventually he steps up and slews them right here in 21. Okay, so now he's been relatively successful so far. Now, what happens? Here's what happens. In 22, after this has all been successful, they ask him to rule over them as like a leader. I'm not going to say a king, could be a king, but I'm asking you, you've been tremendously successful. Would you rule over us? And he says, no. This sounds really good. In 23, look what he says. I'm not going to rule over you. Yahweh will rule over you. Still sounding good, isn't it? Okay, we're there. 24. But there is one thing that I would appreciate. Okay? He says, could you give me, every person, the earrings of the prey of the people that were defeated? Can you give me the earrings? And they had gold. All right? 25. And they said, sure, no problem. Lay out a cloth. Everybody throws their earrings on the cloth, collect them up. 26. There's a lot of stuff there, gold. Plus there was some raiment too and stuff. And the camels apparently were wearing some stuff as well. Now, what does it say? What does Gideon do with the stuff that he's collected? And I'm not saying it's a problem that he collected this stuff, but what did he do with it? It says he made an ephod and put it in the city, and all Israel went a-whoring after it. Because they could not worship God the right way. Instead, they had to worship some item that was part of the original design of the tabernacle, because it, you know, it's like the search for the lost ark. It's all powerful and is going to, you know, enable me to be a powerful person. No. It's an ephod. The high priest works with it. He's the one who's authorized to wear it. But no, Gideon makes one, and it says that Israel went a-whoring after it, and then it says the thing became a snare unto Gideon and unto his house. And then it was a mess. So here we've got a guy, youngest in his house. He's called by the Most High to accomplish a major feat. He had to have faith to believe that he was being called and to execute the plan, pull down the nation of Midian to save Israel. And as you can see in verse 28, it says that after all of these events took place, Israel had quietness for 40 years in the days while Gideon's alive. And then what happens when Gideon dies? They crash and burn. So what I am seeing here is that, yes, notwithstanding what Carol said, these guys could have been young, and I didn't think of that, and I'm glad you brought that up because I made a note. I'm going to check it. In this particular case here, that is not an issue. Gideon was not so young, and we're already past the losing of inheritance problem. So here we are with all that he has done, and now he creates this thing, and all of Israel gets messed up with it, Carol.
My question would be, what was his intention for making it?
Yeah, I wish I knew. Yes, and I'm curious about the text of the previous verse.
Right, that he wants God to be there.
No, that's the previous verse. 27 is the one I'm referring to. He put it in the city. So why would he put it into the city? It appears to me he wasn't wearing it. It doesn't say that. So he made an ephod and he started wearing it around like the high priest. It doesn't say that. It just says that he made the ephod and he put it in the city. Daryl, do you know specifically which part is it? Was it the one that had the 12 stones?
It didn't say anything about the Urim and Thummim.
It doesn't say that in this text, that's true. But it could be the section that has the 12 stones for Israel.
It said they had jewels and gold and the main sephiroth.
Well, you know, that would fit the...
There's a pocket in there.
What's that?
Those stones fit in a pocket in the ephod.
Maybe that was part of how he designed it.
Maybe he wanted them to be led by God. He figured this...
He did. And this was the way he wanted to do it, and it was not the way that's prescribed in the text. And so, once again, what does it fall under? Disobedience.
Maybe.
Maybe.
And yet, he was still alive. If he saw what they were doing, he should have put a stop to it.
He should have put a stop to it, and he didn't.
They had 40 years of peace.
40 years of peace, all the days, and this is true out of all the... I'll check this when we get to Judges in November. But I believe... what I saw in my brief looking at it was that every time there was a judge, as long as the judge was alive, Israel did not go into idol worship. And then as soon as the judge was dead, the next verse says, and Israel declined into idol worship. So I haven't given the thought yet that I have to give to why is that happening. What is the pattern I need to see here in which that happens after multiple judges? So I haven't looked at that yet. This is not really about that. I'm more dealing with the aspect of the Spirit through the Tanakh as we get ready to go into the next section. So that's more of what my focus is. All right, so this is the problem. Gideon received the call. Spirit fell upon him. Through faith, he subdued Midian. Israel had peace. The person who wrote Hebrews notes him in the story as the one who subdued nations. And then we got this thing going in 27. I'm disappointed. That's where I'm at. Carol.
You know Moses set up something that became an idol later on. You do know that Yahweh told him to build.
You're talking about the snake on the pole?
Yeah.
It did become an idol.
And it wasn't wrong that he made it.
Because he was told to make it.
I'm wondering if Gideon made it with the same...
mindset?
Yeah. Whether God told him to, it doesn't say it.
But well, that's true.
He,
right.
You know,
could be. Could
if
be.
His mindset was pure, how did it become a snare unto him?
I know, that's the thing. If he set it up and put it in the city, what Israel does is independent of him. I mean, yes, he's part of Israel, but Israel is the nation, and Israel did not handle it the way it was supposed to be handled. But then it has the last sentence, it also became a snare to Gideon. So that concerns me. I wonder. Because once again, maybe I'm being too black and white about this, but it seems like to me this is all about do not add and do not take away, which seems to always be the problem that Israel ran into. And we will, I'll tell you what we will be discussing when we get to the Judges section, is that the commandment going into the Promised Land was you need to get rid of A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, ites. That's what you need to get rid of. They didn't do it. And so God specifically states, because you didn't get rid of them, I'm going to let them hang around and harass you. That's a problem. So, all right, the last one I want to look in this Tanakh study, we're going to jump over to 1 Samuel. And the chapter that we're going to go to is 10. Okay, so let's take a look. As I sent out in the email homework, you can get the context from chapter 9. But what is happening here is that, in essence, Saul is about to become king of Israel. So the process is underway. So we're going to pick it up at chapter 10 and verse 1 and read for a few verses. Here's what it says. Samuel took the oil, poured it on his head, kissed him. Is it not because Yahweh hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? How about that phrase? That goes back to Deuteronomy 32, which we'll be discussing at the feast.
Mine says people.
What?
Mine says over his people.
Yes. So I don't know what the Hebrew word is because I can't see that here. But continuing. When thou art departed from me today, you'll find two men. And you remember he lost his donkeys. I almost said that he lost something else. he lost his donkeys, and he needed some help finding them. Okay, so three. So they're going along, and here's the. You'll meet these three guys. One's carrying goats. Another has bread, and somebody has wine. And they're going to give you this amount. Okay, and then you'll come to the hill, the garrison, this is five, it'll come to pass. You'll meet some prophets coming down, and then the Spirit of Yahweh will come upon you, and you will prophesy with them. And you shall be turned into another man. So here's the first question. In this event, was this Saul being called into the office of prophet? Or was this a one-off, I'm going to give you a prophecy to say at this single time period, but you're not going to be in the office of prophet? And let me tell you what the difference is. People share Bible knowledge with other people. So then the question becomes, are they a teacher for the moment, or are they in the office of teacher, which is a different calling? So in this particular case here, let me back it up to 5. After you've come to the hill where the garrison of the Philistines is, and you pass by and you come to the city, you'll meet a company of prophets that are coming down from the high place with musical instruments, and they're going to be prophesying. And the Spirit of Yahweh will come upon you, and you will prophesy, and you will be turned into another man. On its face, what does that mean?
That he won't be like he was before the Spirit came upon him.
All right, so he will be different in some aspect. Okay. Any other thoughts on the matter?
We get baptized and learn about the Holy Spirit, we become a new man.
There you go. Okay, so that's something to consider. Let's see how that played out. Excuse me. We're going to move from this chapter, which is chapter 10.
It also says he gave them a new life.
Where?
Chapter 9.
Where? What?
Chapter 10.
Or
what?
Yeah. Chapter
10,
verse
9? That was when.
Yes, it does. That's right. God gave him another heart. What does that mean?
Heart of stone, heart of flesh?
Yeah, I wonder. We'll talk about that in the next session, I assure you. Okay? Now, let's move to chapter 15. We've got some water under the bridge here at this time. And let's see. So Samuel is speaking with Saul. And it says that Yahweh sent me to anoint thee to be king of the people. And so they have some discussion here about this is what you need to do. So he's getting some instructions from the prophet. The prophet has clearly proven himself to be a prophet. And he started out with simple things like, okay, go down the road here and you go run into these guys and they tell you they found your donkeys. Then go a little further down the road, and these guys are going to give you some bread, they're going to give you some wine, they're going to give you something else, I forgot what the third thing was. And then after you pass there, go down here, and then the prophets are going to walk by, and the Spirit's going to fall on you. The prophet Samuel has clearly made his case that I am somebody to reckon with. So when I tell you that the Almighty is giving you instructions, can you believe me? Is it reasonable? So this is where we find ourselves. Now it says, 2 is, this is the Most High speaking, I remember what Amalek did. Goes through that. Now go and smite him utterly, destroy. You know, that's one of those Torah things. Actually, it's 2 commandments. Don't forget what he did and remember what he did. I think it's in 2 places. So, and then it's utterly destroy everything, spare nothing. Slay man and woman, young and even babies, ox and sheep, camels and donkeys. Saul gathered the people and they went and did it. And they goes through a little bit of discussion about how he did it. And he smote them over a long thing. But, verse 8, this is when we get into do not add and do not take away. Believe it or not, it has popped up again. It says, and he took the king of the Amalekites alive. He destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword, but he took the king alive. That was not allowed. 9. What else did he do? Not only did he spare the king, but he spared the best of the sheep and the oxen and all this other stuff. And he wouldn't destroy them, but everything that was not worth eating, vile, refuse, he destroyed that utterly. Okay, so Samuel shows up. What do you think that looks like? He says, it repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me. This is the man who received the Spirit and is a new man with a new heart.
Prophesize.
And prophesies on occasion. He has turned back from following me, this is 11, hath not performed my commandments, and it grieved Samuel, and he cried all night. Samuel rose early in the morning. Saul came to Carmel. We set up a place at blah, blah, blah. 13. I have performed the commandment of Yahweh. 14. What meaneth then this bleating of sheep in my ears and the lowing of oxen which I hear? 15. Y'all are familiar with the verse that we're going to be parking on. They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice and the rest were utterly destroyed. 16, Samuel says, stay, and I'll tell you how this is going to go. 17, then Samuel returns and he says, when thou wast little in thine own sight, were you not made the head of Israel, an anointed king? And you were sent on a journey to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites until everything was consumed. 19, but you decided not to obey the voice of Yahweh, but instead you took the spoil and did evil. 20, I have obeyed the voice. I've gone the way, and I've brought the king, and I utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief things, to sacrifice. And what does Samuel say? What is the great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices and in obeying the voice of Yahweh? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. Where have we heard that before? This is it. And then he even expands it a tad for our benefit. It says, rebellion is the sin of witchcraft, stubbornness is the iniquity and idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of Yahweh, he has rejected you from being king. Then he admits that I've sinned and transgressed, I feared the people and obeyed their voice. And he asks us for pardon, and they eventually work that out. So we have one more section to look at. It's the next chapter of 1 Samuel. This chapter is 15. We're going to look at the last section, which is 16. That was another one, too. Yes, we will look at that, but I think that's in the next one. Okay? So, we get to 16. We've got the person who was chosen by the Almighty, went through the anointing process, saw himself small in his own eyes. He accomplished the task that he was assigned to do. Then, when he gets to the Amalekite problem, he doesn't go all the way through and fulfill the stuff that he was supposed to do because the people didn't. They wanted him to do something else, so he was disobedient. And in that process, as we just reiterated, he received, the Spirit fell on him. Text clearly says the Spirit fell on him. He got a new heart, and he was a new man. And it says here, let me get down to it. Okay, Samuel has arrived. The people are like this. And it 6 says, it came to pass when they were come that they looked on the sons of Jesse, and they're looking for a particular one. And in 7 he says, do not look at the stature, the countenance, the height, etc. Because if you remember, Saul was really tall. When Saul was hiding at the time of the anointing, they were looking for Saul. He had hid, so they had to go pull him out of his hiding place, and when he came out and stood, he was taller from his shoulders up above all the other people. So there you go. That's a height of stature. Because I have refused him. Let's continue. 8. Jesse calls Binadab. Nope. Shema. Nope. 7 sons. Nope. So eventually they have to go get David. You know how that works. Okay. So he takes the horn of oil in 13, anoints him in the midst, and the Spirit of the Lord came on David from that day forward. So Samuel leaves. What does it say in 14? The Spirit leaves Saul. So here we have a situation where new man, new heart, receives the Spirit, does mighty things, and then through disobedience, the Spirit departs. That's pretty serious. I think there's a pattern here. And I think that we have to look at it. And we will look at it in session 2. All right. So, I wanted to set the stage for the things that we will cover by showing you just 3 examples of how a person starts off, might even be honored, and yet it doesn't work out in the end. That is a concern. All right. Any questions on this real simple Tanakh portion here? Yes, let's go to 13. Greg, you requested 13. Is that the correct chapter you requested?
When Saul does the offering.
Yes, what chapter? All right, where is it? Okay, I'm looking. Here it is. Yeah, 8. He tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Samuel was late. Yes, the people were leaving the meeting. So we get to 9. Bring a burnt offering to me, peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering, which, as you know, he's not allowed to do. As soon as he finished making the burnt offering, who shows up? The person who was late. Okay. And then what's this? What have you done? So he tells them, the people were leaving the meeting. I had to do something to keep them from leaving the meeting early. 12. So then it says, you have not kept the commandment. And so, this, I don't know if this is the first big one, but it's definitely there. Honey, go ahead.
In both of those instances, he was influenced by the people.
Yes.
The people were leaving, so I better do a sacrifice. The people talked me into saving the best of the livestock. So, for him, it was more important to please the people than to obey God.
So he was a people pleaser. He feared the people. Yep. All right, Greg, is that good?
Yep.
All right, here we go. This session is over. We will start session 2 after a short break of at least 15 minutes.